You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
There's good news. And there's bad news. The Rockets didn't play especially well, had a lot of fixable problems, and still came within 2 points of defeating the Warriors on Wednesday night for just their first loss in four times against the defending champions this season. That's the relatively good news. The bad news, well, you did lose. The nine-game winning streak is over, and now with the Rockets 5 games back in the loss column of the Warriors, with just 14 games left to play, at least for Houston, 15 for Golden State. Any dreams of the number one seed and potentially having home court advantage should these two teams inevitably meet in the postseason again come May? Well, those are probably gone. That's the bad news. So, to break it all down, welcome in to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. Today's show is brought to you courtesy of our friends and sponsors over at MyBookie. Deposit with MyBookie today with the promo code LOCKEDONNBA, and you can get a 50% sign-up bonus. As we chat this Thursday morning, we're going to begin our post-mortem over the next 20 to 30 minutes into what happened Wednesday night in the 106-104 loss the Rockets suffered at home against the Warriors. It's their first loss in the last 10 games, their first of four with the regular season slate between these two squads, these rivals, now complete. The Rockets led by James Harden, who had 29 points, 10 assists, 10 of 23 from the field. Chris Paul had 24 points, 6 rebounds. Eric Gordon had 17, again on 50% shooting. But the Warriors, DeMarcus Cousins, his finest game since joining them, his 6 weeks or so actually playing for them, missed the first 3 months of the season, coming back from the Achilles tear. He had 27 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists. Klay Thompson, 30 points on better than 50% shooting, 12 of 23 from the field, 5 of 10 from 3. The first time that Klay has scored 30 or more against the Rockets in a regular season game since 2015. And Steph Curry, the guy who said it was a statement game for the Warriors going in, he had 24 points, although the Rockets, especially P.J. Tucker, played some pretty strong defense on him, limiting Curry to just 8 of 20 from the field. Like so many other games between these two rivals, it went down to the wire. The Warriors did lead for the majority of the game, but Houston did find a way to make a push, got as close to a one-point margin in the final minute of the game. But like so many other possessions, the Rockets just could not secure the loose balls, the rebounds, when they had their opportunities. And the theme for the game as a whole, Houston was minus 13 on the glass, Warriors 44, Rockets 31. It's been a theme all season long, and if you're going to beat a team with that level of shooting, you can't be at that much of a negative differential on the glass. They're much closer to parity in the wins in January and February that the Rockets were able to collect against the Warriors. They weren't close to that in Wednesday's loss, and that was one of the biggest reasons for the flip. Now, the Warriors did not have Kevin Durant. Ultimately, though, I'm not sure that that really made all that much of a difference in terms of what happened and the predictive value moving forward, because if you want to play that card for the Warriors last night, okay, well, you can say the Rockets beat them in February, and that was without James Harden, and the Rockets beat them in January, and that was without Chris Paul and Eric Gordon. So it's not as simple as taking the result, extrapolating, and then saying, well, if Kevin Durant had played, or in the game in February, if James Harden had played, because these two teams, they've been there, done that so many different times. They know what they're trying to do in this matchup. They plug and play, and it's not as simple as just putting in a star and then assuming that, well, a close game is then going to become a 10 to 15 point margin, because there's so many complex factors, and generally speaking, so many of these go down to the wire. They've now played 14 times the last year and a half, the regular season and last postseason in the Chris Paul, James Harden era. The Rockets have won 8 of those, and the Warriors have won 6. So even though Houston still has a slight advantage, certainly it's very close. And of course, the Rockets are still trying to do what really matters, which is beat them 4 times out of 7 in May. So as we move our way through Thursday's show, we will get to the individual standouts for both the Warriors and the Rockets in segment 2 and segment 3 of our usual 3-part show. Here off the top, though, the key thing that I'm looking at is what it means for the teams as they embark upon really the final 14, 15 games. 14 in the case of the Rockets, who are 42 and 26, having their 9-game winning streak snapped. 15 left for the Warriors, who improved to 46 and 21. So what does it mean for the remainder of the regular season, and what position does it put both sides in, assuming they do eventually meet in the playoffs down the road? From a psychological standpoint, I don't think that much changes. I certainly don't think the Rockets are all that discouraged, because when you look at the overall numbers in this game, look, Houston shot just 27%, 11 of 41 from 3. Now the Warriors, they did play committed defense, but Houston can shoot better than 27% from 3 against anything. They missed a lot of good looks. PJ Tucker was 1 of 7, and a lot of his were wide open from behind the arc. They need to make those. Iman Shumpert off the bench was 0 of 3 from 3-point range. Daniel House, the guy brought in to potentially replace Shumpert. Now, House did not play last night because he hasn't even been through a practice with the team. Yesterday was his first day back after basically having 2 months off. In his last 12 games, all starts with Houston, House was shooting better than 48% from 3. Shumpert last night, 0 of 3. So that combined 1 of 10 from PJ Tucker and Iman Shumpert. Also, a lot of minutes at the 4 between those two guys. And with them being relatively undersized, that played a role in your rebounding disadvantage. Shumpert with 3, Tucker with just 2 in his 35 minutes. Now, I thought the Rockets being in a third game in 4-night stretch, whereas the Warriors had not played since Sunday, maybe Golden State had some fresher legs, and that contributed to the rebounding battle going from near parity back in January and February to plus 13 for Golden State in this one. Regardless, though, as Mike D'Antoni said after the game, those excuses are for losers, and that's what the Rockets were in this game. They've got to find a way to overcome it, and ultimately, even though a lot of these problems are fixable, the three-point shooting, they'll be better than that. They can't be over 10 percentage points worse. The Warriors were at nearly 38% on their threes, 12 of 32. The Rockets can and should be better than minus 13 on the glass. DeMarcus Cousins should not be able to put up 27, 8, and 7 on 11 of 16 shooting, largely outplaying Clint Capela. That's a battle that the Rockets need to win. Clint did play 40 minutes, but 13 and 13. It's a solid overall stat line. He was by far the top rebounder. On the other end, though, his defense just needs to be a lot better than it was against Bogey Cousins, because on top of the core four who are all out there going back to their first title in 2015, Curry, Thompson, Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala, then you add in the Durant factor. Now you've added in the fifth All-Star in Cousins this year. You've got to be able to attack him more on the defensive end. We'll get to that in segment 2. Overall, though, when you're looking at the numbers, there's just not much of a route for Houston to win if Boogie Cousins is going to outplay Clint Capela. The good news, I don't think that's necessarily going to happen all that often. Even before the Achilles, Capela had a lot of success against Boogie last year when Boogie was with the Pelicans. Earlier this year, the last 2 wins the Rockets posted against the Warriors. Capela was massive in January, 29 and 21. Then in the February game in Oakland, Capela had 15 boards, played a lot of minutes. Boogie was torched in that game. So I don't really see this game as any more telling than the one in February was. I just think it was a bit of an outlier in Golden State's favor in this case. And when those things happen, the plus 13 on the glass for Golden State, and then the huge three-point discrepancy, when you factor that in with the rest of the Warriors' star power, their culture, their defense, it's pretty tough to see the Rockets even coming all that close. And that's why, honestly, I was pleasantly surprised in a game where really so many things went wrong. And while James Harden was better, he was more efficient than Sunday and Monday, 29 points, 10 assists, 10 of 23 from the field, although he was just 2 of 12 from 3. While Harden was better then this weekend, it wasn't like he was in God mode like he was in December and January and able to elevate the team. If you had that Harden, you probably would have won the game last night. As it was, you had probably a B-plus level James Harden game, and it just wasn't enough with all those other problems. as far as what it means, I don't really think it changes the dynamics in terms of the belief of either side all that much. The Warriors wanted to win at least one of the four. You could see Steph Curry's reaction after the game. We know he called it a statement going in. The flip side is a two-point win with all of those things going their way. I certainly don't think it was commanding by any stretch of the imagination to where it put any doubt in the Rockets. From Houston's mindset, they know they've beaten them three or four times in the regular season. They know they were up 3-2 before Chris Paul's hamstring went out in the 2018 Western Conference Finals. I think they know that they can beat the Warriors. It's just what Chris Paul said in the locker room after the game. They have to play smarter. It can't just be about playing hard. And even though they were minus 13 in the glass, I think the Rockets did play hard. They just didn't always execute as well. Technique, maybe some of it's related to the 3-4 phenomenon. I don't know. The point is that Houston, as Chris said, they need to play smarter, and they understand that they can beat Golden State. It's just not a given. They've got to give max effort, and they've also got to play as efficiently and smart as they can. Last night, they didn't. So I really don't think moving forward, there's a ton of predictive value. We know these two teams are fairly evenly matched, and assuming health, that they match up in the playoffs again, well, I think it's likely to be a 6- or 7-game series again. The downside to it is that by losing this game, the Rockets are likely out of play for the number one seed. Somehow, they had gotten back in the mix. If they had won last night, they would have only been 2.5 games back with the Warriors, their next 2 games against the Thunder and the Spurs, and the Rockets, their next 2, Friday night against the Suns, and then Sunday against Minnesota. So there was a chance for Houston somehow to get back in to the number one seed mix. And right now, it's probably gone because you're 5 games back in the loss column, only 14 left to play. And it's just really tough to see the Warriors dropping that many games at this stage in the season. So it is a hit, because one of the reasons the Rockets were able to overcome all those things that went wrong, they were at home. In some respects, it felt like Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals, when they didn't have Chris Paul, when they couldn't throw it in the ocean from 3, and yet they were hanging around within 6 with 3 or 4 minutes left in the game. And a lot of us, certainly myself, I wondered, how in the world is Houston within striking distance? Well, they fed off the crowd, because in big games, and of course the crowd at Toyota Center last night was very engaged, it's impactful. That's why you want a Game 5, a Game 7 in a series that's tied 2-2 or 3-3 in the playoffs to be at your gym. Can the Rockets win on the road? Certainly. They've won in Oakland twice this year. They've beaten the Warriors 3 or 4 times. It is, however, a lot tougher. So now if the Warriors, assuming these two teams meet, and the Rockets do, still have full control of their own destiny as far as getting a top 3 seed, which would put them on the opposite side of the bracket from the Warriors, and hopefully give another team, maybe the Thunder, the Blazers, a chance to knock out the Warriors in round 2. You never know, or at least tax them a little bit. We'll have to wait and see what happens in the playoffs. Ultimately, though, if the likely scenario prevails and these two teams meet again, this is a game in which you had an opportunity. You still would have been an underdog, but to at least get back in the mix for the number 1 seed, it didn't happen. So from that standpoint, I don't think the Rockets feel that differently about can they compete with Golden State. The answer is yes. But the grand scheme, yes, your odds definitely took a hit. It is what it is. Home court advantage should have meant a lot last year. Well, it did mean a lot, and it should have put you over the top, if not for what happened with both Chris Paul, the historic outlier of a shooting stretch, Scott Foster. We could go on and on about that for days. So ultimately, as we wrap up this first segment about what it means, grand scheme, X's and O's, I think the Rockets can make some adjustments that in the playoffs, maybe some of it was Mike D'Antoni not wanting to deploy everything to fully show his hand in the regular season. I could buy that to a degree. Nene, who I thought his bulk was surprisingly useful in February against Boogie, he sat out to rest on Wednesday. That was a bit curious because I think they clearly could have used his 15 minutes, especially with Kenneth Faried struggling on the defensive end. From a basketball standpoint, there is nothing that really troubles me all that much about what we saw Wednesday night. I'm not too discouraged. All the things we saw in this recent 9-game winning streak for the Rockets, they're largely still there. I think they're going to be fine. It's just losing out on the one seed, no matter how unlikely. And to be clear, it's less about last night. It's more the Rockets starting the season 4-7, 11-14. That's why you're not in position to go after the number one seed. Last night was just 1 of 82. However, it was an opportunity to partially offset some of those really bad losses early in the year, and it was there for the taking. The Rockets led by as much as 4 in the second half. They just couldn't put a sustained run together, and well, if you can't grab rebounds, it's tough to get that kind of run, because the other team is just getting second chance points, and with shooters like Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, eventually one of them is going to fall. You'll be pleasantly surprised if somehow the number one or even the number two Rockets fall four games back in the loss column behind Denver at this moment are in play. I think the realistic goal at this point, hold off the Thunder, the Blazers for top three seed, given the other side of the bracket from the Warriors, and if somehow the Warriors or Nuggets have a prolonged losing streak in the weeks ahead that somehow gets you back in the mix for something better than that, be happy with it, deal with it then. From a basketball standpoint, the Rockets, they did some things that were not great last night. I do think they're largely fixable. They only lost by 2 points. It's their first loss in four tries against the Warriors this year. So lots of positive things. Nothing all that concerning, in my opinion, other than, yeah, it's a loss. The winning streak is snapped. And more bigger picture than that, the goal going into the year of another number one seed, yeah, that's probably gone too. And that is going to have some ramifications come May. Can the Rockets overcome it? Sure, they've overcome a lot this year already, and I certainly don't think Chris Paul, James Harden are going to be fazed by any environment, including Oracle Arena, in the playoffs. So I certainly would not write the Rockets off, but it is something that they're going to have to overcome. Now, that's sort of my macro view of the situation between the Rockets and the Warriors, the NBA's top rivals, at least at the highest level at this current moment. There are some more micro-level analysis in terms of the X's and O's, both teams, that I will get to momentarily in segments 2 and 3. But for now, I do want to pause and acknowledge our awesome sponsors over at MyBookie, because without support of sponsors like those guys, we would not be able to bring this show to you as frequently as we do, the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. And well, be it the NBA or college basketball, it's March. That means that it is a huge month for basketball. And next week, well, it is the first week and weekend of the NCAA tournament, which means it's the greatest betting event of the year. And whether you like filling out a bracket, picking national champion, picking those first-round upsets, or really all of the above, MyBookie is the perfect home for your March Madness fun, or if you just want to bet on NBA games instead. If you're looking at it through the college prism, will Zion Williamson and his teammates at Duke cement their legacy with a title? Can Virginia get past their loss last year to a 16 seed? Can Kentucky get back to the Final Four? If you know the answers, or even if you don't, MyBookie is the perfect place to get in on the action. They've got something for everyone, even you, multiple bracket guy. MyBookie, which you can find at mybookie.ag, they've been in business for years, and their goal is to give you the best customer service in the business. The best part of that is that they pay out fast when you win. I'm talking literally within 48 hours. So bet with the best, then kick back, enjoy March Madness, while you watch your picks cash out. Deposit with MyBookie today with the promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a 50% sign-up bonus. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDONNBA. And remember, with MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. Jumping back in to Thursday's show, recapping the 106-104 loss the Rockets suffered at home on Wednesday night to the Golden State Warriors, snapping a 9-game winning streak and putting 5 games of separation in the loss column between the now 42-26 Rockets and the 46-21 Warriors. We spent a lot of segment one talking about the macro-level view, where the two teams are now, the number one seed likely being off the table for Houston, considering it's a 5-game gap in the loss column with only 14 left to play. The last two segments, let's spin it towards the individuals, and I don't want to spend as much time on the individuals, because honestly, between these two teams, we have enough of a history, 14 games, the last regular seasons and postseason, really the last year and a half, that while the numbers are going to ebb and flow between any individual pairing of games, the reality in the grand scheme is that these two teams are pretty evenly matched. It's going to come down to the wire, and a lot of it's just going to be who makes the key shots at the big times. For Golden State, the real story, as mentioned, DeMarcus Cousins, 27-8-7. When you look at the core four plus Cousins and plus Kevin Durant, who did not play, if Boogie Cousins outplays Clint Capella, which he largely did, Capella's stamina was fine, playing 40 minutes, 13-13, but he did not contest Boogie as much as you would like him to or as well, it's tough to see a recipe for the Rockets, because the Warriors just have a greater depth of playmakers, shooters. There's a reason why they have 5 All-Stars, career that is, and Houston only has 2. As far as the game that Boogie had, it was somewhat discouraging from a Rockets perspective. I suppose you could challenge him more in the pick and roll game, and maybe that's a card that they're waiting to play until the playoffs. It didn't seem like they attacked him on the switches with the same vigor that they did in February. Ultimately, though, when you look at Boogie's tenure in Golden State, he's actually been more of a liability on the offensive end than on defense. The numbers are staggeringly bad with the Warriors playing Boogie on the offensive end. They're somewhat poor relative to the norm when he's on defense, but it's the offensive end where he's been too much of a ball stopper. You don't have the ball movement like you normally do, that it's really been a problem for the Warriors. And so, yeah, it can be discouraging if this was something that shows the Warriors the recipe to kind of integrate him much better as they head closer to the playoffs. I think it's definitely a confidence builder for Boogie individually. The question is how much it means for Golden State collectively. If it means a lot, well, yeah, that is a problem because you're adding a really talented player on top of what was already the foundation of, in my opinion, the clearly most talented team in NBA history. The reason I'm not fully buying into it, besides the obvious, it's just one game, I do think Capella can be better. We've seen him play not just against the Warriors, but against Boogie Cousins, going back to last year with the Pelicans, and that was pre-Achilles tear. We've seen Capella play better, so I think there's room for an upgrade there. If they had Nene, even at 36 years old, if he's limited to 15 minutes, I still think that would be a valuable 15 minutes, especially with Kenneth Faried. I'm not sure if it was just the injury, because he did miss most of the last 2 weeks, and he played 13 minutes only on Wednesday night, because defensively he was a major liability in those minutes. If you saw, especially in the first half, that was when the Warriors made their runs. It just didn't seem that there was any trust there, so that's why Capella had to play 40, and who knows, perhaps that took a toll on his effort, 3 and 4 nights for Clint, and then having to play 40 because there's no trust in Faried and Nene not available. Again, I think your hope with Kenneth is that he'll bounce back as he gets more time, because beyond just the physical rust of missing a couple of weeks with the adductor strain, there's also the mental rust. He'd only played one game in the last 2 weeks, Monday against Atlanta, for 20 minutes before this. So maybe mentally he's just not as crisp on his rotations, his box outs, his technique, which is where he was especially deficient in the early going. I do think the Rockets can be deeper up front. I also think if you're going to play a small ball four, which at times you had Iman Shumpert as your four, well, he's 6'5". You can have a 6'7", much more physically tough Daniel House filling those minutes in the weeks ahead, and certainly in the playoffs. The Rockets just didn't want to throw House out there on Wednesday without a practice, and basically day one, his first day back at the NBA level in over 2 months. So I do think you can get longer, you can get tougher, and if you're not playing 3 games in 4 nights, you'll probably have better springs in your legs as well. And flip side, of course, the Warriors have not played since Sunday, so they had a lot more focus, a lot more energy. Beyond those factors, though, I think the other reason that I'm not fully buying in on this DeMarcus Cousins train after just one game is that it did come without Kevin Durant. One of the keys that we said going in, and it applies, I think, to most Rockets-Warriors games, is that if it's pretty, it's probably going to favor Golden State. If they're getting out in transition, if it's free-flowing, they just have more shooters, maybe in a random game, they'll be unlucky. Generally speaking, though, the pretty games are good for them because they thrive on ball movement, shooting, those types of things. When the Rockets win, their recipe is generally like Game 4 and Game 5 of the Western Conference Finals. When neither team got to 100, it becomes a slog, and the Rockets are better equipped to get in the mud and battle. With Kevin Durant, as great as he is, he has shown a tendency, and Matt Moore, HP Basketball on Twitter, has done a good job illustrating it with a few clips in recent days, of playing into that ISO style, which slows the game down even more, makes it the kind of grind that the Rockets want. In this game, without KD, it was easier for the Warriors, especially in the first and third quarters, to get out, push the pace in transition. The ball moved a bit more. Warriors had 33 in the first, 31 points in the third. Again, Klay Thompson got more shots, 23 overall, made 12 of those, his first time scoring 30 or more against the Rockets in a regular season game since 2015. It was easier to run the offense through Boogie at times, who had, again, 27, 8, and 7, 11 of 16 from the field. Even though it was a relative down game efficiency-wise from Curry, 8 of 20 overall, 3 of 9 from 3, we know the value he has as a floor spacer. And the thing with Golden State, or any team that has such an abundance of riches, there is a point of diminishing returns. And this is played in, at least to a small degree, to the numbers we've seen with Golden State offensively being a lot worse with DeMarcus Cousins until Wednesday night. At some point, there is a drop-off where if you have so many elite options, one guy is simply taking touches and shots from somebody else. It's a similar dynamic to, say, U.S. Olympic teams or national teams where, you know, you might pair LeBron James, Kevin Durant, James Harden, Steph Curry. And yet, even though they are far more talented than the teams they're going up against, you generally have at least one or two games in that Olympic run or the national team run that are fairly close and require execution in the fourth quarter of a relatively tight game. Because even on paper, if you see all these names that are just legendary, at some point, there does become a diminishing returns aspect to where a guy is not getting the touches, the shots that it takes him to be as great as we are conditioned to think that he is. So, if you were to put Kevin Durant on the floor on Wednesday night, it does mean fewer shots for Klay Thompson. It may mean fewer touches for Boogie Cousins to get him in the rhythm that he finally found. So that's part of why, again, I would say generally speaking, you can't overreact to a Warriors win without Durant any more than you could say when the Warriors lost to the Rockets in February and Houston did not have James Harden. Or in January when the Warriors lost to the Rockets and Houston did not have Chris Paul and Eric Gordon. With these two teams, we have a mountain of evidence that they're pretty close no matter who is out there. It's just the way it is between the Warriors and the Rockets. To get back to the Durant point, though, I certainly don't think that the Warriors are better off without him. I think to some degree it's a one-game blip, especially with Cousins getting hot. This was by far his best game. Big picture, though, I do think that it reminds you that it's not as simple as just keep stacking talent and they're just going to get increasingly more dominant. If you're talking about going from one star to two or two to three, probably, because there's a gravitational pull component to where even if a certain guy isn't getting the shots he might get if he's the only star, well, because of the attention it draws from the defense, at some point it makes the game easier for everyone else on the court. But when we start talking about going from three to four and four to five, those types of things, well, eventually the floor is already so stacked anyway, it's just a matter of who is going to get the shots, who's going to get the touches. And to some degree, I do think that Klay Thompson getting into rhythm, and certainly Boogie Cousins, his best game by far since joining the Warriors, is correlated with getting additional touches and superior ball movement that they would not have gotten if Kevin Durant were out there. Now, I don't think, again, that the Warriors are better off without KD, because some of these games, KD and especially Boogie, they just aren't going to be as hot, and you're going to need Durant to make some tough shots in isolation to overcome that. In a one-game scenario, however, I do think it paid off for them. So, number one, kudos to Boogie and Klay for stepping up. If the Warriors' second and third best players execute like that, and, of course, unfortunately, when they're at full strength, they're more like the third and fourth best players, maybe third and fifth when you factor in Draymond Green. They certainly need Kevin Durant to beat the Rockets four times out of seven. In a one-game scenario, however, I don't really think it's the end of the world, especially if they get the contributions they got from the likes of Boogie and Klay. So just as the Rockets were able in a one-game scenario in January and February to overcome their absences, their issues with CP3, Eric Gordon, and even James Harden, well, the Warriors proved it on Wednesday night without Kevin Durant. Grand scheme, does it really change that much in the dynamics between the two teams? No, but in a one-game scenario, did it play into the surprising success the Warriors had in some aspects and perhaps leaving the Rockets unable to adjust on the fly? Maybe. I can buy it. So I don't know how much predictive value there is, but in a one-game scenario, yeah, I think the Warriors caught the Rockets by surprise a little bit, and kudos to Steve Kerr for putting those guys in the position to succeed, and all the respect in the world to Boogie and Klay Thompson for having some of their best games in a long while. It was certainly a statement for those two. Final thoughts as we close out Wednesday's show. I mentioned briefly Kenneth Faried, and in this segment where we're talking about Rockets individually, and we're talking about Faried a lot from the context of who didn't play well. Clearly, with the Warriors' success, and that's why we were talking about Faried during the last segment, they were able to exploit some matchups in their favor. Faried limited to just 13 minutes. Is it mental rust from coming off a nearly two-week layoff, or are his defensive deficiencies so much that he's not going to be able to play much in this matchup? That is going to be a big deal because the Rockets overall, the biggest variable that went against them, the negative 13 rebounding differential. Well, Faried's one of your top rebounders, but if he can't stay on the floor, that is going to be a problem. So in terms of individuals from a negative standpoint, I would say Faried was definitely one of the concern points. Capella, I think it's a bit of an off game. Again, 13 and 13, the overall stat line in 40 minutes was fine. 6 of 9 shooting from the field. I just thought that defensively he did not contest Boogie Cousins, who, again, 27 points, 11 of 16 shooting, as well as he had in the past. He can be better. And then Iman Shumpert, 0 of 3 on threes off the bench in his 14 minutes, largely as a small ball four at times because they did not trust Fareed to play. Well, that's part of why you brought Daniel House Jr. back. And we heard from Mike D'Antoni after the game, the 106-104 loss, of course, on Wednesday night to the Warriors, snapping the 9-game winning streak, that he would get Daniel House more involved and thought he needed to as an athletic wing, taller, more explosive than Iman Shumpert. That's not D'Antoni's words, those are mine. But as far as what Mike D'Antoni said, getting him more involved, it doesn't take a genius to figure out whose minutes he might take. So to me, those were the biggest negatives. I wouldn't say so much that James Harden was a negative. 29 points, 10 assists. Certainly overall, his net presence was a positive. I would just say that relative to his MVP form, 2 of 12 from 3, he could have been better. I don't think it's anything overly alarming. And the fact that, you know, he got to the line 9 times and made 8 of 11 shots inside the arc tells you that his wrist is getting better. Also had 10 assists to 2 turnovers, so there was better efficiency from James. That has lagged of late. So some positive signs. He just needs to make threes. If we had January James Harden on that historic run, that might could have helped the Rockets overcome it all. They didn't. So as far as individuals' needs for improvement, I would say those are what stand out from a Rockets standpoint. As far as positively, oh, and I mentioned in the first segment, but P.J. Tucker, 1 of 7 from 3, he missed a lot of really good looks. So even though his defense on Steph Curry was really nice, you need him to make more than 1 of 7 shots. Make even 3 of 7, and this game entirely changes. From a positive standpoint, the two guys that really jump out, Chris Paul and Eric Gordon. We've sung Eric Gordon's praises a lot lately. 17 points, 50% shooting again, 6 of 12 from the field, 3 of 7 from 3. So March as a whole, we've said that for the Rockets to have a chance against the Warriors, Eric Gordon is someone, that third wheel offensively that has to contribute, has to space the floor. He's still shooting 50% on threes in March. The worst he shot in any game is 39%. That was 5 of 13 in Sunday's win over Dallas. 50% again on threes for the month, 54% overall. His last three games, he has been, actually every game this month, he has been 50% or better from the field, exactly 50% his last three. So Eric Gordon is the variable. That's a big deal. Who I thought was clearly Houston's shining star in this one was Chris Paul. 24 points, 7 of 12 shooting, 6 rebounds, 3 assists. Even though he was just 2 of 6 from 3, he was actually 5 of 6 inside the arc. That's how he got to 7 of 12 overall. He had the 3-point play, getting fouled by Andre Iguodala in the last minute of the game, which got it to a 1-point margin. Ultimately, though, Houston just could not secure the loose balls, the rebounds that they needed to give them a chance to actually win the game. And if there's been a theme that we've had to talk about too often this year, it's can Chris Paul step up to the level the Rockets need as the Robin to James Harden's Batman, especially in this matchup against the star-studded Warriors. There's actually a good article in The Ringer that came out earlier Wednesday about Paul's percentage drop-offs on many plays, such as finishing at the rim, pick-and-roll ball handling, all these types of things where, for the year as a whole, he has not been as efficient as he was a year ago. In many cases, not even close to it. And I think that's misleading because Chris was clearly injured towards the start of the year, not 100%. In December, before he went out for 5 weeks with a grade 2 hamstring strain, he was struggling with it before then. And I think that took a toll on his overall year-long efficiency numbers. In my opinion, he's been a lot better since coming back in late January, especially since the All-Star break. To see him take it to this level, 24 and 6 on better than 50% shooting in 33 minutes, all on game 3 of a 3-4 night stretch. Yeah, it reminds you that Chris Paul is still able, when the lights are brightest, of elevating his game and becoming that guy he was last postseason, playoff CP3. How much can he do it in the regular season? I don't know. And perhaps that's why the Rockets are 4.5 games back of the Warriors, which is clearly the leading storyline. The number one seed's gone at this point. I think Houston's just playing for the number 3, making sure they have home court advantage in the first round, and hopefully, A, on the other side of the bracket from the Warriors, and B, playing the Spurs, the Jazz, the Clippers, someone much weaker in round 1 than either Oklahoma City or Portland, which would probably be your opponent if you were to fall to the 4-5 line, either one of those slots. As far as the postseason, though, Houston's viability as a legitimate contender, just like last year, it's going to hinge on Chris Paul staying healthy, and assuming he does stay healthy, then does he still have that playoff CP3, that extra gear still left in his tank that he can reach down and get when the Rockets really need it? And in my opinion, what we saw Wednesday night, even though going in, Chris had shot just about 25% for the month of March, he was in a funk, and I don't think that he was injured or anything like that. I think it's just randomness, but to see him bounce back from a bad month, nothing really going right for him the last few games, at least from a shooting perspective, to then have 24-6 against the Warriors on better than 50% shooting. Yeah, that's really encouraging that, assuming health, and that's a big assumption, knock on wood, that's true, that is a big hypothetical, but if he can stay healthy, then yes, he's still got the gene. He can still be the point god. And that at least gives you a fighting chance against Golden State. It wasn't enough to get you the win on Wednesday night. It did, however, keep you within striking distance. And on a night that the Rockets did not get the win, and ultimately pretty deflating because your 9-game winning streak is now history, at least you can take some consolation from the fact that you played far from your best game, and yet you were still right there in the last minute with a chance to win the game. And the biggest reason for that, Chris Paul is still Chris Paul. So with that relatively positive conclusion, given what I thought was overall a bit of a downer of an episode, I think that's where we'll wrap it to kind of keep us all feeling at least pretty decent, because you can't dwell on the loss for too long. The Rockets do have a quick turnaround, you played Wednesday against the Warriors, and now you play again on Friday against the Phoenix Suns, a team that over the past couple of weeks has beaten the Warriors earlier this week, and then I believe the Bucks the week before that. So they have slayed some giants, so the Rockets, they can't have a hangover effect. The Suns, led by Devin Booker, it's a quality young team, so the Rockets have to move past this pretty quickly. Maybe this is an opportunity to integrate Daniel House if someone that's had to put on a lot of mileage this week, 3-4, needs a rest. And hopefully, House, maybe his return gives you the extra bit of juice you need to move past it on Friday night. So in an effort to help the Rockets move past it, I think that's what we need to do by wrapping up this podcast as well, and now turning our attention to the Phoenix Suns and what remains on the rest of the Rockets' schedule as they look to lock down a top 3 seed and get themselves as advantaged a spot in the postseason as they possibly can. If you want more content before our next episode, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Also, an email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com, a Facebook account, facebook.com/lockedonrockets, a website, lockedonrockets.com. All those are ways that you can access our prior content, or you can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, pretty much anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan, or even you, the human being. Also, on the subject of sponsors, don't forget about MyBookie, the fine folks responsible for bringing you today's show. If you deposit today with MyBookie and use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA, you can get an initial 50% sign-up bonus. That's our sponsors at MyBookie, mybookie.ag. So until next time, this is where we will break it. As always, thanks so much for listening. Once again, the unhappy final from Toyota Center late Wednesday night. Warriors 106, Rockets 104, Houston falls to 42-26, and the 9-game winning streak, the season-best 9-game winning streak, is no more. Rockets are back in action Friday night, also at home, against the Phoenix Suns. Until that one, enjoy the remainder of your work week, and please come back soon for more episodes right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.